afternoon, everyone. My name is Sarah Serba, and I am the Associate for Advocacy and Development at the National Consumer Voice for Quality Long-Term Care, called the Consumer Voice for short. For those of you who don't know us, we are a nonprofit national organization that advocates for people receiving care and services at home, in assisted living, or in a nursing home. I will be facilitating this phone call this afternoon along with my colleague, Robin Grant, our Director of Public Policy and Advocacy. We'd like to welcome you all to this conference call titled Long-Term Services and Supports, Consumer Input Call, and thank you for taking the time out of your day to participate. We'd like to start today by giving you all a little bit of background on the reason and purpose for this conference call. As part of a big project, we are working nationally and in 5 states to advocate for quality home care. But in order to do that, we need to better understand what is important to people like you who receive care and services in their own homes. So we have been interviewing people in the 5 states and having people give us information by computer to learn about consumers' experiences with home care and their opinions. This national conference call is one more way for us to get perspectives of consumers. The information we get from those interviews and from this call will be used to write a report for policymakers with recommendations about how to make home care better. Let me tell you a little bit about what this conference call will be like. Everyone's phone lines are now muted. In our conversation today, Robin will ask your opinions about 5 different topics. First, she'll ask some general questions. Then, she'll ask about your workers, your care and services, the kind of choices you'd like to make, and finally, what you think the government can do. Once Robin asks the question, we would like to hear your thoughts. If you would like to respond to that particular question, please hit 1-4 on your phone. You will then be placed in line in the order in which you responded. So, if you are the third person to hit 1-4, you will be the third person in the line. We will give several people time to share their opinions on a question and then move on to the next question. There will be 10 questions total with 5 minutes allotted per question. We will do our best to try to hear from as many different people as possible. You do not have to give input on any questions you do not want to, and you can also leave the call at any time and for any reason. We want to make sure you know that your participation in this conference call is completely voluntary and will not affect your care or any benefits you receive. Also, there are no right or wrong answers. As we said, the information you provide will be summed up and used to write a report titled The Consumer Perspective on Quality Care Report about how to make home care better for people. Your name will not appear in the report, but we do want to let you know that there has been so much interest in this call, we are recording it. This means if you respond to any of the questions, your name will be recorded. For that reason, and because we want everyone to feel comfortable about speaking up, we will only identify people by their first name. As we go through the questions, I will be taking notes of your responses, and we will summarize what is said. One note I would like to mention before we start with the questions. In order to get the most time possible to hear from all of you, we will move the question and answer portion to the end of the call. I will now hand this call over to my colleague, Robin, who will begin asking questions.
Thank you, Sarah. And before we start the questions, I want to join Sarah in thanking all of you for taking your time today to participate in this session and for your willingness to share your opinions. In doing that, you're really making a very important contribution to the project that we're working on, and we just want you all to know how very grateful we are. So as Sarah said, I'm going to read each question, and just as a reminder, the questions I'll be asking you are listed on the agenda you received, so you can follow along as I ask the questions. After I've read a question, Frank, our operator, will give you instructions on what you need to do if you want to speak. And I do want to stress, as Sarah did, that we only have a few minutes for each question, 5 to 6 or so. So it's possible that some people may not get a chance to speak. We just want to apologize for that in advance, and we're going to do our best to be as fair as we can and let as many different people talk as possible. So with that, let's go ahead and get started. And I'm going to ask question number one. How is your home care paid for? How is your home care paid for? Frank, could you give people instructions on what they need to do to speak up?
If you'd like to register for a question, please press the 1-4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. Now, if your answer or question has been answered and you would like to withdraw the registration, press the 1 followed by the 3. And we do have a question from the line of Debbie. Please proceed.
This is through a state nursing home waiver program.
Okay, great. Thank you. Appreciate that.
And we do have an answer from Ronald. Please proceed.
Pardon?
Ronald, you're on.
Something wrong with the phone here, I don't know.
Ronald, your line is open. Please proceed.
What do you want me to do?
Well, it sounded like you were in line to answer the question and tell us how your home care is paid for. Are you still interested in doing that?
Yeah, I'm on the state home, whatever it is, service.
Okay, so your home care is paid for through the state?
Yes.
Is it a waiver program, Medicaid waiver?
Yes.
Do you know? I'm sorry, did you say yes?
Yes.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you, Ronald.
Yeah.
Anyone else?
And we have an answer from the line of Barry. Please proceed.
Barry, thank you.
Yeah, mine's a little different. It's through the state Medicaid thing, but also I have a thing called, out here it's called MeV, and basically it's where they allow me so much budget that I sit there and hire the caregiver myself.
Ah, okay. So that that's still Medicaid waiver dollars, but you are in control of them and how they're spent?
That is correct, yes.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I've heard about that program. So, Barry, thank you.
We have an answer from the line of Roxy. Please proceed.
Yes, I'm in Oregon, and I have a program called Independent Choices, which is through the Senior and Disabled Services. It is a Medicare Medicaid program. I also have a copay that I make every month to pay in toward it, and I'm allowed to hire and fire my own care providers and make all my own payments. So it's totally within my own control.
Okay, so you control how you spend your money?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Wow. Thank you, Roxy.
We have an answer from the line of Stephanie. Please proceed.
Yeah. The service the state paid for it.
Okay. The state pays for it?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you happen to know if Medicaid is involved?
I'm not sure.
Okay. Okay, no problem. But the state pays for it. That's great, Stephanie. So thank you for helping us with that.
We have an answer from the line of Rosalie. Please proceed.
Hello. I'm calling for my disabled son and for my mother. My mother received private pay care through providers that we hired and paid personally from a list provided by the hospital. That was a miserable experience. My son receives waived Medicaid services for the developmentally disabled. That is greatly superior.
Wow. Okay. So you've experienced both private pay and Medicaid services.
That's exactly right.
Okay. And it sounds like you had two very different experiences.
Over a space of over 20 years.
Wow. Well, Rosalie, maybe we'll hear from you again later on about some of your experiences. And I'm glad at least you're having a good experience with your son's services. So thank you.
It's mediated through an agency who does background checks and things like that,
okay.
And I find that very helpful.
Okay, that's really good to know. So thank you.
You're welcome.
So I think we have time for about two more responses, if there are two more people.
We have a response from the line of Nancy. Please proceed.
Hi, I receive California in-home supportive services where I'm given an amount of money to hire my own caregivers, and I'm wildly happy with that way of doing things.
Oh, wildly happy. Well, that's great to hear. Okay. Thank you, Nancy.
Mm-hmm.
We have a response from the line of Julie. Please proceed.
Hi, Ramit. How are you doing today?
Julie, hi. Nice to hear your voice.
Bless your heart. I'm happy to hear your voice, too, so hope things are going well for you. Okay, I receive through my state Medicaid programs called COLDS program, Coordination of Long-Term Services, and they pay an agency. They give the money to directly the agency for my care. And it took me two or three tries to find a good agency, but the one I have now I'm very happy with, so I'm pleased with that.
Okay. Thank you, Julie. I have to brag about you just for 1 minute and just tell everybody that
oh, gosh.
Julie has been helping us with this project from the very beginning, and her thoughts and ideas and perspective as a consumer are just invaluable. So, Julie, thank you.
You're quite welcome.
I bet you're blushing, but I can't see
yes,
you.
Yes, I am.
Okay. Okay. All right, well, thank you all so much. It sounds like a lot of services are definitely paid for through Medicaid, so that's really helpful information. So I'm going to move on to question number two, and this is, what are some things you like about receiving services and care in your own home instead of a nursing home? Let me read that just one more time. What are some things you like about receiving services and care in your own home instead of a nursing home? So, Frank, you want to give directions again?
For a response, please register by pressing the 1 followed by the 4. We do have a response from the line of Susan. Please proceed.
Yes, I'm taking care of my mother who's 102 in my own home. I prefer that over the nursing home. She gets family attention on a regular basis, and reading her signals and following the kinds of care that she needs is really important to us as a family.
Wow, okay. So that family attention is something that she gets, and you're able to pick up on her signals in a way
right.
that you don't think would happen in a nursing home, it sounds like.
That's right.
Okay. Wow. Well, congratulations to your mother on 102. That's fabulous.
Well, she's been with us for 4 years, and we're really pleased with what's going on. We have a private agency that comes into the home and helps us out.
Great. Well, maybe we can hear more about your experiences in some of the other questions. So thank you so much, Susan.
You're welcome.
We have a response from the line of Betty. Please proceed.
Hi, I'm Betty in Idaho. My husband's 80 years old. I'm 77. He had a brain injury in 1999, severe, where his deficits are such he needs full care. I'm an LPN. I thought I would be able to care for him. However, with time, I couldn't and had back surgery from lifting him, and so I have five people that come 2 hours in the morning, one in the afternoon and one in the evening to help put them to bed each day. And we just did handicap horseback riding today. Just that's why I'm a little late in getting on. But I'm private pay, and I'm down to $200 in my savings. I can't get on Medicaid. The caregivers, some are private, some are through the agency. And it's been a real hard row.
Yeah, it sounds very difficult. So it sounds like you're just doing everything that you possibly can for
him. I am trying, and I'm going through the VA, too, because the VA, which paid $4,500 plus the medications and his diapers, because we worked hard, we have two lots by our place, and they're considered assets, so we don't qualify for anything. Many people didn't work as hard as we have. They are able to get on Medicaid. And Medicare doesn't pay for anything once he's stabilized from his accident. There's
right.
no funds.
Well,
so
Betty,
I find it very difficult.
I can see why. And if we can, please feel free to contact us offline, and we can see if we can maybe refer you to some places that might be able to look into your situation and perhaps.
Oh, the Office of the Aging does help me. I used to have 24 hours a month, but now I get 18 because their funds were cut. But that is helpful. So I get on Wednesday 6 hours of someone who comes in for respite.
Okay. Wow. Well, it just sounds like you are doing amazing work. So, Betty, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for all that you do and for your information today.
Thank you.
We have a response from the line of Lila. Please proceed.
Hi. I'm just listening to Betty, and I'm feeling badly. I'm a caregiver for my husband. He has multiple sclerosis, and he was a dentist anyway, closed his practice in 1989. So we raised our children all, taking care of him in the house. He was doing better. Now he's a quadriplegic and basically bedbound. But it's important to have him at the home. We were able to have the home modified, and it fulfills the emotional needs for both the patient and the caregiver. Being around family, knowing where he is, the caregiver doesn't have to run and go someplace and then come back to their own home at night. So on many levels, it's very important to keep them in the home. And my wishes have always been that someday we would be able to get we're private pay. We used to get help through the county, but just like Betty, we have too many assets to qualify for any assistance. So we hope our money lasts, and it's a difficult road. We hope that somehow Medicare, as opposed to paying just for a few visits after he comes home from the hospital periodically, that we could have somehow some kind of outside support help in the home for long-term care problems.
Right, right. Well, thank you, Lila. I tell you, paying for long-term care is really, really difficult
yeah,
in our country.
I know.
It really is. What all
I had an idea. I think this comes at the end, what you were discussing about how to, I think, pay for this, and I was thinking that perhaps it can go through at some point in time through health insurance, and maybe have it, I don't know, somehow fund it that way as opposed to Medicare itself, part of a health insurance program through your regular Blue Cross and that type of thing.
Yeah. In our opinion, something like that to help people pay for this is desperately needed. And if
right.
we have time at the end of the call, I may tell you a little bit about
okay.
An sure. effort that the government, a law was passed that would have allowed for something called the CLASS Act, which is a step
okay.
in that direction, but not
unfortunately
not heading in that direction right now. But
but
thank you so much, Lila. And,
thank
and
you.
Best of luck.
Thank you.
We have a response from the line of Mark. Please proceed.
I am a quadriplegic, mentally dependent, and poor organ. And I like receiving services in my home because I get to make sure everything's done my way. It allows me also to have a life outside the home where I am not bedridden. And that's why I like having it at home.
Yeah, yeah. So it gives you a life. And it,
right.
So you can do it your way. I think that's a really good point, an important point, Mark. So thank you
for
bringing that up. And I'm glad you're at home.
We have a response from Maggie. Please proceed.
Hi. When I heard that situation about the woman that's caring for her mother at home, it really irritates me that the Medicaid folks in the various different states don't tell you up front that if her mother would be paying rent, a couple dollars toward rent, utilities, phone, etc., her income would be divided and calculated not based on the property you all own, but on her own income, and she would then be eligible for the Medicaid home care program. As to my own feelings about home versus nursing home, home means social model, nursing homes means medical model. Medical model doesn't begin to touch the needs I have to make me whole. Emotionally, spiritually, physically, and I know I'm headed for eventually being in a nursing home, and it scares the holy heck out of me. I know that my mouth operates before the brain kicks into function, and I'll no doubt be in trouble the first 24 hours because I want to protect what's wrong, be it with me or others. And so I really fear going into a nursing home, and I will cling to this California in-home supportive services program as long as I can. But I'm also on a waiver, federal waiver program, which allows me, between the two programs, over 500 hours of home care. And I have angels working for me, but they come, they go. And when they go, it's very traumatizing because you've learned to love them, for they touch your body with respect instead of turning you over and slapping on a diaper with no feelings. You have people that care about you very deeply, and you care about them. Thanks for this opportunity.
Oh, thank you, Maggie. What an amazing response. I love that you said that it makes you whole living at home. And I do, in terms of the point you were making about rent and Medicaid, I just would suggest to folks that Medicaid varies so much from state to state that finding out what the rules are in your state is really, really important. You certainly don't
They won't tell you either. You have to go to a nonprofit like a group of attorneys to tell you the truth, because the state and the counties will not do it. So for goodness sake, please research it, because your mother very well could be eligible, or a husband could be eligible for services when the county's telling you no.
Yeah, so really doing as much research as you can, and maybe double checking to make sure that what you're hearing is accurate. Thanks for the advice, Maggie. Really appreciate that.
We have a response from the line of Tracy. Please proceed.
Hello. I have multiple sclerosis, and I live in my caregiver's house, which is a friend of mine, and I've recently moved to a nursing facility.
Oh, wow.
One nursing facility that I'm living in, I really like. and I was, like the young lady before me, I was scared to death going to a nursing facility, so I'm there now, and I really like it a lot. It's a great thing to be sociable. I've made wonderful friends, and I do believe that the state, I'm on Medi-Cal, and Medi-Cal has paid for IHSS when I was receiving my care at my friend's house, and I think it's the same now, but I have a copay. And that's
Tracy, I am so delighted to hear that you are having a good experience in the nursing home. What strikes you as being just really different from your experience at home?
I get out more.
You get out more now that you're in the nursing facility?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Fortunately, I can hop on the bus and go to my support groups. And I was doing that before, but not as much as I am now.
Okay. So it sounds
and
like you've
around a lot more people.
Okay. Wow. Well. Thank you. That's a different perspective, and I hope that it gives people that are you know feeling like they are very worried about going into a nursing home,
and
maybe a little bit of hope.
Yeah. I was scared, but now that I'm there, I'm getting myself established and making wonderful friends, too.
Well, that is tremendous to hear, and I think that certainly gives me hope for nursing home experience.
Good.
So
I hope it gives hope for others, too.
Right. Tracy, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
So why don't we, if there's still somebody who would like to speak, why don't we take one more response?
We have a response from Dennis. Please proceed.
Yeah, I'm a quadriplegic since 1964, and I'm on Medicare, Medi-Cal. I live in California. My home care comes through in-home supportive services. I've been on the program since day one when it started. Being a quad, I've been pretty fortunate, but I think it's due to the fact that I've been able to instruct and teach my helpers how to help me in the needs that I need to do. In the 48 years I've been in the chair, I've had real good health. I've had no bed sores. As far as nursing homes, I've been there visiting friends, and personally I would not be able to survive in one. A couple reasons why. You're not in charge there, whereas at home, and you're overseeing your own care, it's up to you to be responsible for your well-being. And you have that ability to do that better in your own situation rather than depending on people in nursing homes. Like hospitals, the nurses are always overworked. They don't have enough time to do a lot of things that you need to do. That's how I feel about it, so.
Wow. Well, thank you, Dennis. So, so I was struck by what you said in terms of, you know, at home, you know, you're in charge, but you're not, you know, in the nursing home, so you can oversee your own care.
Well, there's a lot of things that, you know, are always paperwork, and they can't get done until paperwork. Whereas at home, if there's an immediate need, it's usually taken care of, and it's done with. I could go on and on, but I'm really happy with the situation. I think the governor ought to give the program a chance. They've been willing to work with budgets for years now, and that's about it. I have a lot of other remarks for some of your other questions, too. But
okay, well, we will look forward to hearing them then. So thank you.
All right.
Okay, well, I just want to say you all are just giving us wonderful information, and just thank you so much. This is really fantastic. So, question number three. If you could change anything about the home services and care you receive, what would you change? So if you could change anything about the home services and care you receive, what would you change? So, Frank, can I turn it over to you?
Ladies and gentlemen, for a response, please press the 1 followed by the 4. We have a response from the line of Bonnie. Please proceed.
Hi. I would like more flexibility in scheduling. I would love it if my home care makers, my homemaker caregivers could be less sloppy and less uncaring about what they're doing, as if this were not just a temporary job, but they could see it from my eyes. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Bonnie. Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
More flexibility in scheduling. Could you just tell me a little bit about what that would look like?
Yes, I have doctor's appointments, and I have a volunteer job and several other things like that. I'm not completely housebound. Depends on the state of my problems. And when I need to get out, I need to get out and maintain a normal life, and they will not give me extra services if I can't conform to their schedule.
Okay.
They say, well, we haven't got anybody that can work at that time.
I see. Okay. Thank you. That's very helpful information for us to hear.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Bonnie.
We have a response from the line of Debbie F. Please proceed.
Hi. I take care of my brother, and he has multiple disabilities, including an inability to speak anymore. And having him at home and having healthcare workers come to the house is really a great thing for me, because I'm not in a position where I have to get him ready to go to a daycare or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And because my brother has so many disabilities, the few times I've had to put him in a facility because he needed, you know, some medical treatment or something, you know, I swear to God, they almost kill him. So, and you know what? I'm answering the wrong question, and
that's,
I do apologize.
Okay. Now, would you like to speak to the third question, if you could change anything?
Well, basically, one of the good things is having him at home is, and having one-on-one with the aides taking care of him is really great for him, because he can't talk. Somebody can, you know, put a TV show on. When it ends, they can change a channel. You know, they can put things on that are interesting to him. But if it's okay, I would also answer that question three with regard to what I would change, and that's the... my brother's on a program provided through the state to keep him in the home. And what I find is they will provide Hoyer lifts and equipment and all kinds of things, but you have a home or a condo, and it's not designed for huge equipment.
Mm.
And I find there's alternative equipment out there that is more designed for homes, and things that are more designed for homes generally are not allowed to be paid for through Medicaid or Medicare. And I just feel if states are going to do this in-home program for people, that maybe something they should consider are alternative Hoyer lifts and alternative equipment to have in homes that make more sense. You know, you can't get a Hoyer lift through a bathroom door, you know.
Wow.
So anyways.
Wow. Debbie, that is really helpful information. You know, I had not heard that. I had not heard of people having difficulty and that they're alternatives. So really appreciate that information.
Okay, thank you.
Well, thank you.
We have a response from the line of Altia. Please proceed.
Hello. I want to tell you first up that I... and the guardian for my mother, who is served in a nursing home. I am the power of attorney for my father, who is served in an assisted living facility. I myself have disabilities and am served in a home setting that is paid for through a managed care organization. And I am also a single mother of a young lady who was born missing her brain, who is also served in our home by two different funding sources. One is straight Medicaid and one is a Medicaid waiver source. So while I have a fairly broad perspective, I'm going to answer this question specifically from the home care situation that is paid for through the waiver services and straight Medicaid for my daughter. And the two things that I would change, and I'm sorry, I'm answering with two instead of just one.
No, that's okay. I didn't give a number.
Okay. One is I think that it is important for assessments for level of care and funding to be more inclusive of the entire family situation as opposed to simply the straight medical needs of the person being served. I think that the community that you live in, the resources that might or might not be available, the whether or not there's extended family, whether or not there's networking, that kind of thing, all plays into what is necessary for an individual, and at least currently with the program that serves my daughter, the assessments are done simply on how long does it take you to tie your shoes, if you can do that, and you know, whether or not you can feed yourself or bathe yourself, that kind of thing, do activities of daily living. It doesn't really take into effect the full picture. And then the much more concrete comment that I would like to make is that, like Barry, we're served through something called NEVIA in New Mexico, where we're given an annual budget that we allocate for my daughter's needs. And overall, it's fairly wonderful. But there are limitations in terms of what we can choose to pay our employees. And that leads to situations where we may or may not be competitive for a very dwindling service staff pool. So if we could change something for her, it would be the opportunity within the same budget, not asking for a larger budget, but within the same budget allocation, to be able to offer whatever hourly or salaried rate that we feel is justified for the individual, as well as expanding the opportunity to provide within that budget benefits such as health care or paid leave.
So without changing the overall budget, but to have the opportunity to pay a wage that you feel is right and to offer benefits.
Exactly. I mean, what we find is because the parameters for pay are so narrow, after a couple of years of service, someone might choose to move on because they can get a higher wage at a hospital or some other situation, and we are unable to compete with that. Whereas we'd be more than willing to have fewer hours within that same allocation of budget to have the expertise of someone we have invested 2 years of training into.
I see. Okay. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. Thank you. And I just have to say, you have a lot on your plate. My goodness. Guardian, power of attorney, yourself, daughter. So, sounds like you're truly amazing. So, thank you.
Well, we have the opportunity to really view situations from
from every possible perspective. Almost. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we take one more?
We have a response from Ronald. Please proceed.
Hi. I'm through home health and hop this out of Medicare waiver. And I have ladies, three different ones, come here. It's my wife that has Alzheimer's real bad. And they take wonderful care of her, and I appreciate what they're doing very much. I have no fault to find.
That's fabulous. So it's good, and it there isn't anything that you would change.
No, the only thing is
I shouldn't be worrying about myself, but this has been going on for 2 or 3 years. I'd like to get the hell out of here once in a while and do something of my own, but I can't.
Ah, okay. Okay, so maybe a little bit of relief for you.
Yeah, I do the cooking, I get dressed in the morning and get her undressed at night and stuff like that. And we've been married 57 years. I wouldn't have it any other way.
Wow. Well, I would just encourage you to ask around because there are programs that where you can get that kind of relief. Somebody can come in and maybe stay with your wife for a little while you get a break.
Yeah, so I'd like to.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
Girls are wonderful. Girls are wonderful.
I'm so glad. So, Ronald, it's called respite care, so maybe you can ask and see about getting some.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like you absolutely deserve it. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Okay, so we're ready for question number 4. And that question is, do you feel that you get enough hours of care in your home? Do you feel that you get enough hours of care and service as well in your home? Okay. Frank.
For a response, please press the 1-4 on your telephone. We have a response from Sydney. Please proceed.
Hello.
Hi there.
I sound young. I'm an only child of a single mother who's had to take care of her mother and many of her family members who are dying from cancer. And I've noticed throughout observing her that though our personal care or home health aides, whatever you want to call them, have enough hours for the time that they spend in the house, they're not using those hours effectively. And I think it's due to the fact that they're poorly trained. Like, they don't really know how to properly take care of and spend the time that they are in the home to the best of their ability for the elders that they're serving.
I see. So it's not a matter of amount or the amount of time, but how it's used.
Correct. Right.
Okay.
And they need more time as well, but at least if they're going to be in the house, like, don't spend it watching TV. You could spend it making nutritious meals and using your time more effectively, interacting with the elder on a physical and mental level. And if they were educated slightly, even just through, like, online classes, something, they would understand what the elder needs and be able to impact them on a better level of care.
Sydney, thank you. That is really helpful. Really helpful. And maybe you can speak on the next question about what kind of training when we get to that one. So thank you.
Thanks.
We have a response from Stephanie. Please proceed. Stephanie, your line is open. Please proceed.
I'm being on plant, not in.
I'm sorry, Stephanie. I didn't hear that. Could you repeat it?
I'm being on Platinum.
Just wanted to ask you, Stephanie. Do you would you like more hours of care?
No, I have enough.
You have enough. Okay. Well, thank you.
We have a response from Kathleen. Please proceed.
Hello.
Hi there.
I actually was hoping to respond to one of the other questions, but I can answer this question as well.
Okay.
I think some people would benefit from more hours than are covered by the government funding programs in some instances, but there was a comment made by a previous caller about the more versatile equipment being covered by Medicare or Medicaid. I thought that was an excellent point to raise. I'm so glad that lady mentioned that. And and the previous commenter mentioned about the need for caregivers, the primary caregiver, as well as some of the lower-level home care aides, really could benefit from much more education regarding how to care for themselves on a spiritual and emotional level, as well as to plan time more efficiently, and also for better levels of interaction with the elders. I think a lot of people think that old people in particular are like just giant children, and they're not. And they have, I think they have their own special needs that people need to be sensitive to and aware of. And I think family caregivers as well as paid caregivers need to be better informed about that.
Excellent. Thank you. So that speaks a little bit to the question about training, I think, as well. So you've covered a lot of bases there. Thank you.
Well, I'm grateful for the opportunity. This is a good idea.
Oh, well, we hope to do something like this on some kind of ongoing basis. So you'll hear more about that in a little bit. But thank you for being on today.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
We have a response from Roxy. Please proceed.
I receive care in my own home through the Independent Choices program in Oregon, and so I have control of my money. But my biggest thing is that I don't get enough money, even though I get quite a bit. For my 24-hour care, it makes it very difficult to provide a decent wage to my home care providers. I also do not have medical benefits for my home care providers, and that's very difficult for some people.
So that makes it hard for you to get care because it's hard to pay someone a decent wage and give them the benefits that you would like to give them.
Yes, it is.
Okay. Wow. So that's something that we're hearing now from you. We heard that from somebody earlier too. It's a very important point, Roxy. Thank you very much for sharing that.
Thank you.
We have a response from Maggie. Please proceed.
Hi, me again, and California. I wish people would identify like the previous responder that she was in Oregon so we know where things are happening.
Okay.
So when people speak out, if they would say what state they live in, it would probably be helpful. Just a comment for the administrators of this call. I think that part of what you were mentioning about training, it is important in California. Legislation just passed, and a substantial amount of money, $11.8 million, is going to be distributed among the unions that control the in-home supportive services program. To begin with, they're going to start statewide bargaining for a set number of counties, and I don't believe that statewide bargaining should take place. I think it should be done in individual counties because each county has specific needs and are very different than other counties, urban versus rural. And the unions have virtually forgotten the rural counties, and they're working under minimum wage, which is a tremendous hardship on providers. Whereas the urban areas range from $9.30 an hour up to $12.50 an hour. In San Francisco, San Mateo counties, they have very high rate of pay. And that's because there was bargaining done individually and locally, because those are high-cost, high-living counties. And so a living wage is really critically important even for the rural counties, and mentioned earlier were benefits. But as far as training goes for the home care provider
that responsibility totally falls on the family, and the care providers need to sit down and have a conference with the people they're caring for and their loved ones to establish a routine of how they want things done for their mother, their brother, or for themselves, because flexibility is built into how you train your individual provider. And if they're not willing to comply to what's needed in the home, then you need to replace them, and that's not an easy matter. So I would like to offer, I, for one, would very much like to see what's happening today to be enhanced. I think it's a fabulous idea, and I'm looking forward to what your future will be bringing to those of us who'd like to participate.
Oh, okay.
Again.
Well, fabulous. Thank you. Thank you, Maggie. You touched on a lot of very good points there. And why don't we go ahead and move to the next question, because a lot of folks are touching on the issue of training, which obviously is really important. So let's go to question number five. What kind of training do you think workers should have in order to do their job well? What kind of training do you think workers should have in order to do their job well? And I would just encourage maybe some of you who haven't spoken out, we would love to hear from you. Nobody is forced to speak at all, but we would love for everyone to get a chance to speak if they would like to. So, Frank, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Thank you. For a response, please press the 1 followed by the 4. To withdraw your response, you can press the 1 followed by the 3. We have a response from the line of Joey. Please proceed.
Yes, this is Joey Riley and Michael Condon here in California. And I'd like to echo what Maggie said. And as far as training, Michael, did you have your idea about training?
Well, I could add that the idea is that there are so many different types of disabilities, and there are a number of people that want to direct their own care and want to train their own caregivers, which I think is very important for the independent living movement. I'm a disabled veteran. I've been paralyzed from the neck down for 41 years, and I have trained a large number of caregivers to be responsible for my care, and fortunately I'm able to do that, although there are certainly a large number of people who are not able to do that. Certainly people who have Alzheimer's and that kind of thing are really not going to be able to direct their own care. So it would be good for, you know, people that are going to be working for those type of people do have some kind of sensitivity to kind of that kind of thing. I know a number of people that do have Alzheimer's, and very often I've known that their caregivers don't believe, that they don't understand what's going on, and they get the caregiver gets frustrated because they think that the person they're caring for actually understands, because sometimes they do understand and sometimes they don't. So it's kind of difficult to, you know, narrow it down to exactly what kind of training people should have, but certainly I would guess that all caregivers could benefit from, you know, the standard type of universal precautions and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and also like CPR or things that, you know, would be universally, you know, cross disability. And as far as I did press the button about what would we change. The IHSS system, you know, doesn't cover a lot of services, and notoriously in California, people are underassessed by their social workers, the social workers who they would turn to if they needed help. Sometimes the social worker doesn't get back to people for 2 or 3 weeks. They're really overloaded, and or they don't work enough hours. I don't know what the problem is with social workers, but
Yeah, and to that point, as far as people getting enough hours, generally they don't. And yeah, I know in California, there's a maximum of 283 for the in-home supportive services program, but then there are waivers that can be put on top of that, but there's a long waiting for, list for that, and many people don't even know that there are waivers available, and even, including the social workers, you know, who should be offering it to the people that need it, and they don't even know that it exists. And I would also add to that point, there's something called protective supervision. As I said, I'm totally paralyzed from the neck down, and I'm require someone to do all of my care. And there's something in California called protective supervision, which allows for 24-hour care, but it's not reimbursed, not necessarily reimbursed. So there are a lot of people who need much more care than they're actually getting.
Right. And
I'm sorry, we probably need to move on, but I want to thank you both for giving us lots of information on a number of different points. And also, Joey and Michael, I know I've spoken with you on one-on-one interviews, and you've been wonderful about providing lots of input. So thank you so much. I'm sorry,
oh,
we're just
you.
Going to have to move on, but really good points.
We have a response from the line of Joseph. Please proceed.
Yes, I'm from Oregon, and I wanted to...
Oh, unfortunately, we're not able to hear you. So maybe we'll need to move on and hope that we can hear you better a little later. Really sorry.
We have a response from the line of Barbara D. Please proceed.
Hi. Thank you. I'm from New York. I would say I'm a caretaker for my dad who has multiple health problems, and I find it very rigid, the care. And I think it goes to both questions, the last one and this one. We had a simple, in terms of training, in New York State, I think it's 3 months for training for the home health aides. And we had a problem that because I happen to be a nurse as well, I was able to pick up and find there was a simple solution in terms of changing medication dose. And because of that, we solved the problem, and my dad stopped getting lightheaded and dizzy. And the home health aide didn't have the background knowledge for that. So either there has to be a staff mix where you're getting a nurse in often enough or somebody who's trained in medication often enough to identify problems, or you have to have more training for the home health aide so that when very simple to fix problems come up, there's an awareness of it. In the case of my dad, he was passing out and getting lightheaded and bawling because, and it turned out it was a blood pressure medication problem. And we were able to adjust that and get it fixed. So that's the first thing. And the other thing in terms of hours, it's also kind of rigid because we got hours we didn't need, but we didn't get the hours we needed. My dad has both mobility problems, post-stroke, seizure disorder, so someone's got to be with him all the time, and cardiac disease. And he lives home with me. And we keep getting people who come and talk to us about not eating salt, which, of course, when you have low blood pressure is not really an issue. But then when we needed somebody in the house for a certain number of hours, so I, as a caretaker, I could go out and do some shopping and stuff like that just for food and just basic necessities. Like if I had someone in the house 2 days a week, it would be much easier for me to take care of that. And now I do have someone 2 days a week, but I pay them out of pocket because I can get someone every time he's in the hospital to come and go over the same checklist of papers and stuff, but I can't get someone to come, just to stay with him and keep him safe from falling and things like that. So I would say the hours are too rigidly set up in what you can get and what you can't get, and there has to be more training, particularly for being able to identify emergent problems.
Okay, great. That is really helpful. Thank you. How about let's just take one more question about training, and then we'll move on.
We have a response from Julie. Please proceed.
Oh, Robin, no, my response is it Julie from New Mexico? I guess, I don't know. I had a response for way back long, and I didn't remove myself. I'm very sorry.
Oh.
So just go ahead and move on, because I don't have a response to this answer.
Okay. Thank
sorry
you,
about
Julie.
That. My fault.
Sorry about that from our end.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Well, let's go on to the next question. So it's number six. Does your worker have the flexibility they need to help with all the things you need help with? Does your worker have the flexibility they need to help with all the things you need help with? Okay, Frank?
For a response, please press the 1-4 on your telephone. We have a response from Tracy. Please proceed.
Is that you? Hi, my name is Sandy, and I live in California. My caregiver is very, very good, but I was looking around at some of my friends' caregivers, and some of the things that I see that they need help with their flexibility is the need for more hours or somebody to come in to relieve them. Some of them are there for 7 days a week and many hours during those times, but they really do need somebody that's going to come in and relieve them so they can do what they need to do, or if they have to run somewhere, you know, to pick up medications or things like that. And so that's my response.
Okay. That I think it's a really important point. So, Sandy, thank you.
Welcome.
We have a response from Nancy. Please proceed.
Hi. I so much appreciate this forum, by the way. I really feel we're being heard, which doesn't happen on all stakeholder calls. I want to echo what many people have said about flexibility. And I think when you have your own provider, when you're a self-directing disabled person, if you don't have your own provider and can set your own hours, you don't have a life. And as Maggie said earlier, when you go by the medical model and you're imprisoned as a patient in your own home by an agency, it's not having any civil rights. And the other point I wanted to mention is the flexibility is so, so much important so that a person can have a life. The other critical point I'd like to make is there's no one-size-fits-all for this. This is a wildly divergent population. It goes from self-directing people who want to train their caregivers in their own care, or family members who very much know their person's care, or people who really do need someone to case manage for them and get them training. It's so important that a one-size-fits-all program is not, you know, kind of shoved down everyone's throats. It's really important that this be a cafeteria of services designed for the individual. In terms of training, my attendants I can certainly train them in the way that I want. There was a move from mandatory training in California. And by the way, I'm with the IHSS Consumers Union of California.
Okay.
Mandatory training doesn't make any sense. It needs to be that people can get the kind of training they need or deliver their own training according to their own needs. And flexibility is absolutely the difference between underserving the frail and ruining the independence of those who are independent. Thank you for the time.
Thank you. And I was just struck by a number of things you said, in terms of including imprisoned in your own home by an agency. That's a very powerful statement. So thank you, Nancy. How about one more question, one more answer to the flexibility question, and then we'll move on.
We have a response from Mark. Please proceed.
Yes, I'm from Oregon, and my caregivers get all the flexibility they need to perform every task I do. And then one quick comment to the training needs.
Uh-huh.
In Oregon, state-paid caregivers are offered training classes through the state. I think that's very good.
Okay, so Oregon offers training to workers?
To Oregon Home Care.
Okay.
Through the Oregon Home Care Commission.
Wow, thank you. That is really interesting. It's good to know. Thank you, Mark.
You're welcome.
Okay. Well, let's move on to seven. Question seven, would it be helpful to create a written plan for your care with your worker? So the idea would be you and your worker coming up with a written plan for your care. So would that be helpful? Thanks.
Ladies and gentlemen, to register a response, please press the 1-4, and to withdraw your response, please press the 1-3. We have a response from Debbie. Please proceed.
Is this the Debbie that you're talking to? Hello?
Sure.
Okay, I've been on trying to answer every question, but this is the only one question I didn't attempt to answer.
Sorry.
I can say that a written plan of care with your individual worker doesn't do much good, in my opinion, because if you have a good relationship with your worker, they can be flexible, you can be flexible. But I would like to just bring out that since I've been trying to answer all the other questions, I think there needs to be more government control of these agencies that hire the home care workers, because I want to speak from not being a home care worker but having worked with many. From their point of view, they're very low paid. They don't get benefits. They don't get paid, at least in my state, for transportation. They get no health care. So they're working under stress. They're not well trained. Yet the agencies, and my family member is under a state Medicaid waiver program, but these agencies consider them independent employees. They send you letters saying they're independent employees. So they're getting a large percentage of what the state is paying them, yet they're offering the employee very little in return. And as a result, the person receiving the care is getting untrained workers, and they're getting you know, workers that come and go. So as far as improving overall all the services, I think there needs to be some kind of oversight, especially when it's a state-funded program. And I just wanted to touch on another point that I just wanted to answer, the number of hours. I'm caring for a person who needs 24-hour care. I get 24 hours on the waiver program. I started out working full-time. I'm now working part-time. My family member could be in a nursing home under Medicaid, and the nursing home would be paid, I don't know, anywhere, I guess, from $50,000 under Medicaid to care for her. What the state is offering me is a small percentage of what me to help care for my mother at home, a small percentage of what they would pay a nursing home. So I'd like to see some parity to enable more people to stay in their homes, and I'd like to see more regulation of the home health care agencies where they would provide a better environment for their workers, who in turn could provide a better quality of care. So I'm sorry I touched on a lot of different things.
That's okay, Debbie. That's very helpful information. And I mean, we are going to talk about government in just a little bit. So I think you've spoken in part to that question as well. So really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And I do apologize to all of you who are trying to, you know, answer one question and then we've moved on. We knew this wouldn't be the perfect situation. So thank you for your understanding. We just so appreciate hearing from you all today. So another question then, let me just ask it again. So would it be helpful to create a written plan for your care with your worker? Anybody else want to speak to that?
We have a response from Evelyn. Please proceed.
Thank you. A written plan would not work with the organization that I work with because most of the employees don't speak English. They are from other countries, and mostly I use sign language, show them what I need, or just put it out there and say, this is next and this is next, but a written plan would not work because they are not necessarily English people. I mean, English-speaking people, I'm sorry. I do right now have a caregiver that is African-American that does speak English, which has not always been the case. My husband is a stroke survivor for 9 years, and I've had caregivers from the same organization in my home. Some were good and some were not. But as it stands right now, I don't have a complaint about the caregiver themselves, but it's just the fact that a written plan would not necessarily work.
What an excellent point about, you know, workers who, for whom, you know, English is not their first language. Very important point. So thank you so much for making that.
Thank you.
So I'm going to make an announcement now. We always try to be very, very respectful of the time of participants on our calls. But this time, you all have had so much to say, and it's been so good that we still haven't had a chance to get to all the questions. So I'm going to ask you all want to continue past 4:15. We will continue on about maybe 10 more minutes, maybe to about 4:25 or so, to try to get all the questions in. And we certainly understand if you need to leave at 4:15. I apologize for that. It's just you just had such tremendous responses that it's been hard to move from one question to the next. So with that, let's take one more question about the written plan, and then we'll move on.
We have a response from Rosalie. Please proceed.
My son's care is so involved and complex that were there not a written plan, things would not get done.
Okay.
Some big lapses. So it's important that there is a written plan, and actually we have a 24-hour schedule.
Is that something you create?
Yes. I'm a retired healthcare worker, but my son had a serious head injury 24 years ago. He also is a quadriplegic, but he isn't able to speak either. So lots of very complex needs, and everything needs to be written down and very closely supervised. And fortunately, we're able to supervise that care since it's in our home.
Okay. Rosalie, thank you. Sounds like that's certainly a really big job. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Okay. Well, let's move on to question number 8. If you have a problem with your care and services, who do you turn to for help? So if you have a problem with your care and services, who do you turn to for help? So I'm going to ask Frank to give you instructions, which I'm sure you know by now.
To register for a response, please press the 1-4 on your telephone. We have a response from Kathleen. Please proceed.
Oh, boy. Hi again.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi. I had hoped to speak to a previous question about the training, but I can certainly answer this question. We turn to the caseworker or social worker, case manager, social worker. And sometimes we just... might try to deal directly with, if we're dealing with the private agency, with the director of the agency or something like that.
You want to say just a word about the training?
I would love to.
Okay.
I would love to.
I just ask you to keep it brief.
I will. I think it's important to cover things such as the confidentiality and dealing with conflict, how to ethically and respectfully manage activity in a person's home if you're providing at-home care, tips on how to communicate with the extended healthcare team
And as I mentioned previously, it's important to understand about the process of aging and the special needs of the elderly if you're dealing with old people. And I think a lot of primary care providers could use some information about ergonomics and how to take protect themselves from injury while they're caring for someone at home, and things of that nature. You know, the safety matters that can be easily addressed in a home if you're aware of what they are.
Great. Okay, well, you've given that a lot of thought.
And I have a ton more to say about it, but I'm going to respect the time, and I'm so glad
okay,
I got through again.
Thank you very much. That's very helpful. Okay, so question again, if you have a problem with your care, who do you turn to for help?
We have a response from Sydney. Please proceed.
Oh, is this for the case manager question? Because I guess you guys are getting our punches late, so I punched a long time ago.
Oh, sorry about that. Yeah, this is the question. If you have a problem, who do you turn to for help?
I turn to self-help, reading books and finding information online on how to handle issues. As an only child, I'm going to have to deal with my mother aging, and I'm planning ahead. I know there's a lot of online courses, specifically like CertifiedCare.org. They have certification programs. I've been going through that to educate myself on how to deal with her when her time comes.
Okay. Wow. I hadn't heard about CertifiedCare.org.
Yeah.
So, thank you. Wow. This is learning a lot here. So thank you, Sydney.
Welcome.
We have a response from Bonnie. Please proceed.
Yes. I had punched in for several questions, so I don't know how I got in this time because I never knew if I got in.
Okay.
If you have a problem with your care and services, who do you turn to for help?
Yep.
That's a big question because there is nobody. My supposed case manager is the one that is making all the wrong decisions. The wrong decisions are to create a care plan for your worker. Well, I need specific things each time that do not get taken care of, because if you do the care plan, you don't get to the specific things. If your worker had flexibility, that would be nice, but the same person that I'm talking about that you should be able to turn to is the one that says no and says that, and she prevents the workers who could be more flexible from responding, but then they're not allowed to respond to needs for more flexibility. And number four, enough hours of care, they're not responsive to changes in my health, and they won't do another evaluation over and over, and it's the same person that I should be able to turn for help to that says you don't need another evaluation when a new operation has gone sour or something like that. Okay, that's all I had to say.
Okay, thank you. So that was a very good point. So the person that you are supposed to or should be able to turn to is, in fact, the problem. So,
yes.
That's tough. How about one more answer?
Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Okay, let's see. One more answer to that question.
We have a response from Betty. Please proceed.
Hi. I guess it's just like before, you punch in on a different question and you end up...
Okay.
But I will address the fact that I think a procedure paper is very important for, in my case, where it's such a blessing to have my husband at home. I mean, he and I have been married almost 50 years. To have him here in versus being in a nursing home has been just enhancement because we can play footsies in the bed even though he doesn't talk. He doesn't do anything, but he has feelings. Those things are so important to me to be able to do that. And I would like to say the procedure is so important to have because I have 5 different people coming in, and we have a good rapport, and just being of human interest, that's what I really emphasize to the girls. I think you have to use common sense when you're caring for people, and especially my husband, because he only is able to wink. That's his only means of communication. And feeding him is so important because he could choke, which he has. And the other day, he's at DNR, and they called 911 at once when I was gone, and they were very... I said, I did the wrong thing. I said, no, you did not do the wrong thing, even though he's at DNR. You have to do what 911. And I think that having a good communication with those helpers that come in is so important for me. But back to that question of let's see, we were at 9.
You have a problem with your care?
Oh, yeah. See, I find it, the Office of the Aging here in Idaho is my lifeline. That is the only one I can bounce off of. And it sounds like California has a lot of services. We're just kind of out here in Idaho. But home care to me is the only way to go if you can do it. Thank you so much for trying
you,
to.
Thank you. Okay, so we're going to move on to number 9. Would you be in favor of the government creating a home care ombudsman? So that's a person or people who don't work for the home care agency, but that you could turn to for help. So would you be in favor of a home care ombudsman, which is a person who doesn't work for the home care agency, that you could turn to for help? So, Frank.
For a response, please press the 1-4 on your telephone. We have a response from Debbie F. Please proceed.
I'm personally always not in favor of government having more involvement in anything. I'm in New York, and I have to say that the programs that they have set up here with the Medicare waivers and so on and so forth are pretty good. I only had some problems when this new healthcare stuff, this mandated healthcare stuff is coming through because they did make some changes. But in my particular case, I've gone up to Albany a few times when I've had problems. The capital here where the Medicaid and Medicare is located, and I've usually had a really good response back from them. So I don't know, just to me, adding some extra government people doesn't make a lot of sense from my point of view. But thank you.
Thank you. And that's what we wanted, your point of view. So thank you.
We have a response from Ronald. Please proceed.
I really don't have an answer for that. I'm through the state of Vermont, and I'm very happy with the setup I have. They come at 8 in the morning. They go home at 12:30 during the week. Weekends, they're here from 8 to 11. And I think things are working pretty good the way it is.
Glad to
hear
that.
That's all I got to say.
Well, thank you.
We have a response from Altia. Please proceed.
Yes, hello. I'm from New Mexico for the person who wanted to know what state we were calling from. My response is kind of a yes and no.
Okay.
It's been my experience that many of the things that typical ombudsman might provide are already available through a variety of advocacy organizations, but that the one missing piece that consistently in both New Mexico and folks that I interact with in other states say is missing is either legal or political awareness, because many of the home and community-based programs report to the individuals being served that such and such can't be done or must be done because of something at the federal level. And it's always fairly vague, and it's sort of passing the buck. And there is no consistent place a participant can go to confirm that information. And I would love to see an ombudsman of that skill level available to say, oh, yes, there is a regulation within, you know, the CMS for X, Y, and Z, or no, there isn't, and here's how you respond.
Okay, so somebody who has good knowledge, like legal knowledge, the knowledge of the rules and regulations that govern the program.
Exactly. You know, not the more typical, here's how you could be more self-empowered, or here's a resource that you could go to, but someone that really could be kind of a buck stops here answer person.
Great, Althea. That's really interesting to hear. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, if you will bear with me, we will ask this one last question and then close up. And you all have been wonderful for going the extra mile and spending the extra time with us. So, again, our thanks. The last question, question number 10 that I'm trying to find here. Do you think the government is involved too much, too little, or just the right amount in helping people to get quality home care? So this is our Goldilocks and the Three Bears question. Do you think the government is involved too much, too little, or just the right amount in helping people to get quality home care? Frank, one last time.
To register a response, please press the 1-4 on your telephone. We have a response from Dennis. Please proceed.
Yeah, right now I'm calling from California, and we're struggling with IHSS still being in existence. They want to do a dual eligibility where Medicare and Medi-Cal people would go to a different system. I think over the years IHSS has proven itself to adjust to the needs of the people. They've done a pretty good job for the staff they've had. I would like to see the government involved in more in a positive way than in a negative way. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
We have a response from Roxy. Please proceed. Roxy, your line is open. Please proceed.
Oh, maybe we lost Roxy.
I'll proceed with, we have a response from Maggie. Please proceed.
Hi. A little bit more in California and the dual eligible. Nancy, who's been on the phone with us, has been Wonder Woman and trying to deal with the state and their contractor and so many issues. I'm not sure if she even sleeps at night. Nancy was responsible for, and a few others, being responsible in developing the IHSS Consumer Union. The unions have unions, but the consumers didn't have a union until this was developed. And I'm hoping Nancy has a chance to give the website or email address where people on the phone can join the consumer union. So many people don't know about it. The dual eligibles are going to be in 8 counties are going to be forced into managed care, but there will be an opt-out very narrow window. A letter will be sent out to the consumers in the selected counties that will give them an opportunity to opt out their Medicare, and hopefully this can be spread around on listservs because it'll be a very narrow opportunity. I'd like to see the state do what they're doing, but a caveat on that is what they've done is too much, too soon, too much rushing, not enough input from consumers, and as a result, I'd like to see what the state is doing stopped immediately by CMS. I don't think that the state is ready. I don't think they've listened, and I'd like to see a lawsuit developed to stop the state in their tracks. It's despicable when all of the straight Medi-Cal people were shoved into managed care. It's called SPD, Special Physical Disabilities, or Seniors of Physical Disabilities. They're in a managed care that stopped kidney transplants, cancer treatments, kidney dialysis, and much more. And it was wrong to start it up until they were ready. So I don't want
to... Megan, I'm going to have to unfortunately stop you there, but thank you for taking the time. And in terms of that website, if Nancy could email it to Sarah Serba, and you have her email address, we'd be happy to share it with folks.
Thank you.
So we actually are not only running out of time, but probably will soon lose the line itself. So unfortunately, we do have to stop now, but I just want to tell you that you all have been awesome. And the fact that you all stayed on beyond the length of time shows us that, you just have a lot to contribute, and the information you have given us has been invaluable. So thank you, thank you, thank you. I'm going to turn it back over to Sarah, who's going to tell you a little bit about a way that you can continue to share your experiences with us. Sarah?
Yes, hello again, everyone, and thank you, Robin. And also, I just wanted to reiterate Robin's sentiments and just really thank everyone for participating in the call. Moving forward, because all of your feedback is so incredibly valuable and important to us, we are forming a Consumer Input Council, which will meet by phone. So the council is a two-way street. You will have the opportunity to provide us feedback about your experiences with home care, and we will have the opportunity to give you updates about what's happening with long-term care policy, as well as provide you with ways to speak out and make a difference. So the first conference call of the Consumer Input Council will take place October 25th, 2012 at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. Now, when you registered for this conference call, you were asked if you would like to be a part of a group that we consult periodically about home care issues. If you answered yes to that question, we've already added you to our Consumer Input Council. If you didn't respond to that question or can't remember how you responded and would like to be a part of this committee, please email me at scirba@theconsumervoice.org. Or you can call me at 202-332-2275, extension 221, and I'd be happy to place you on our council list.
Great. Thank you, Sarah. With one last thing we want to add, and in terms of what Sarah said, we really want to continue to hear about your experiences because that helps inform us and helps us figure out what's best to advocate for in terms of policy and trying to get improvements. So I hope that many of you will participate in the call on October 25th. Just one last thing briefly. We would love it and urge you to sign up to be a member of our Consumer Voice Action Network. It's free. You do have to have email. But it's a way to keep up to date on long-term care news and policy developments, and it's a way for you to make your voice heard and to take action. You know, things like sending a message to your congressperson or a message to CMS. So we've given you a flyer that tells you how to join. You can do it online on our website, or you can call Sarah Serva. But I just want to urge you to get involved, because your voices are important, and the more voices that are speaking up, the bigger a difference we can make. So I hope that many of you will join us. So Sarah is just going to wrap things up very quickly.
Yes. So in closing, we want to thank you again for taking your time today to share your thoughts and opinions with us. Your input has been extremely helpful, and we could not do this project without people like you. We'll let you know when the report comes out, which should be this September. Also, our next national conference call will be in October, so stay tuned. And don't forget about the Consumer Input Council or the Action Network. This will conclude our call this afternoon. Thank you all again for your time and your valuable insight. Goodbye, and have a nice day.
Thank you again.